Only after two iterations, we realize how deeply the Belt and Road Initiative embeds Chinese technology standards in partner countries' infrastructure. That's a form of leverage that's hard to unwind once it's in place.
To put numbers on that, by 2023, Chinese companies had signed over $1 trillion in BRI-related contracts. And in sectors like 5G, Huawei alone supplied equipment to more than 140 countries. That scale makes switching providers a massive technical and financial hurdle.
But if a country's economy becomes too tied to Chinese supply chains, what happens if political tensions flare up? Couldn't that dependency backfire? Especially if global attitudes shift or sanctions come into play?
It's a double-edged sword. Local firms sometimes benefit from new infrastructure, but they also risk being sidelined by state-backed Chinese giants with easier access to capital and government support. That can stifle domestic competition in the long run.
Here's the takeaway. China's self-reliance push, like Made in China 2025, is about more than just reducing imports. It's about controlling key nodes in global value chains, which gives Beijing outsized influence if those links ever get tested.
And yet, full self-sufficiency is a tall order. For example, China still imports over 80% of its semiconductor needs, even with heavy investment. Closing that gap will take years, if it's possible at all.
If partner countries start to see these dependencies as a strategic risk, couldn't they accelerate efforts to diversify away from Chinese systems? That might limit the long-term effectiveness of this strategy.
Uncertain. Some governments are already reevaluating deals or adding security reviews, but the economic incentives remain strong. It's a balancing act between immediate gains and future vulnerabilities.
What surprised me most was how deeply the Chinese Communist Party embeds itself in both state-owned and private firms. It's not just about ownership party committees actually shape decisions inside companies, even those that are technically private. That's a level of political integration you rarely see in Western economies.
To put some numbers on that, as of 2021, over 90% of China's top private firms had established internal party organizations. This isn't just symbolic. These committees can influence hiring, investment, and even product strategy, especially in sectors like tech and finance.
But if the state is so involved, doesn't that risk stifling innovation? I mean, if every major decision has to align with political priorities, how do smaller or independent firms compete, or even survive, against these massive state-backed players?
Only after two iterations of regulatory tightening did we see how selective the system can be. For example, fintech giants faced sudden crackdowns, while traditional banks, mostly state-owned, were shielded. This creates an uneven playing field, where political favor can matter more than market performance.
Here's the takeaway. China's model enables rapid resource mobilization and long-term planning, but it also concentrates power and limits independent actors. The trade-off is clear efficiency and resilience on one side, but less room for bottom-up innovation and market-driven risk-taking.
And compared to Western models, where regulatory bodies are typically separate from corporate governance, China's fusion of party and enterprise blurs those lines. That might explain why state-aligned firms dominate sectors like energy and telecom, while smaller players face persistent barriers.
Only after two iterations, we realize that the regulatory frameworks in China don't just shape domestic tech giants. They essentially bind these companies to state surveillance goals, even when their products are exported abroad.
To put numbers on that, over 80 countries have reportedly adopted Chinese surveillance technology. According to a 2022 Freedom House report, that's not just about hardware. It's about embedding a model of governance that prioritizes state control over individual privacy.
But what happens if a country wants the infrastructure but doesn't want the same level of surveillance? Is it even possible to separate the technology from the governance model? Or are they inevitably linked?
If recipient nations lack robust data protection laws or independent oversight, they might unintentionally replicate China's approach. That could erode democratic norms, especially if citizens aren't aware of how their data is being used.
Here's the takeaway. Adopting these systems isn't just a technical upgrade, it's a governance choice. The risk is that digital infrastructure becomes a Trojan horse for authoritarian practices, unless there's deliberate resistance or adaptation.
and the economic incentives are strong. Chinese firms often offer these technologies at lower costs, bundled with financing, making them attractive to governments with limited budgets. That can tip the balance toward adoption, even if the long-term consequences are uncertain.
Can international actors actually influence this trend, though? If the demand is there and the price is right, what leverage do outside governments or NGOs really have?
One possible lever is transparency, pushing for open standards and public debate before these systems are rolled out. But without local political will, even that might fall short.
Only after two iterations, we realize how deeply the state's priorities shape corporate strategies in China. It's not just about profit margins. Companies are expected to align with national objectives, which changes the entire calculus for market competition.
To put numbers on that, over 70% of China's largest firms have Communist Party committees embedded in their governance structures. This isn't just symbolic. It means executive decisions can be directly influenced by political mandates, not just shareholder interests.
But does that necessarily stifle innovation, or could it simply redirect it? If a company's R&D is focused on strategic sectors like AI or green tech because of state guidance, is that less innovative than Western firms chasing consumer trends?
Uncertain. What's clear is that for small businesses, this fusion creates a precarious environment. Success can hinge as much on political connections as on market performance, which undermines the idea of a level playing field.
Here's the takeaway. When corporations act as extensions of state policy, their international partners often see them as proxies for government interests. That complicates trust and regulatory oversight, especially in sectors like telecom or infrastructure.
There's evidence for that several Western countries have imposed restrictions on Chinese firms like Huawei, citing national security concerns. The blurred line between public and private makes it difficult to assess where commercial ambition ends and state strategy begins.
If accountability mechanisms are so tightly linked to political compliance, what recourse exists when things go wrong? Is there any independent oversight, or does everything funnel back to party control?
Not specified. The available information suggests that leaders of these companies hold significant power, but it's always contingent on staying in line with political expectations. That's a fragile kind of authority.
Only after two iterations, we realized how deeply state-aligned corporate power can reshape not just markets, but the very guardrails of democracy. Here's the takeaway. When economic influence is concentrated in politically backed firms, the checks and balances that underpin open societies face unprecedented stress.
To put a number on it, Chinese state-owned enterprises account for over 23% of the world's largest companies by revenue, according to Fortune's Global 500. That scale, combined with direct political support, lets them weather losses and outlast competitors in ways that private firms and democratic systems simply can't.
But if democratic governments try to match that level of intervention, don't they risk undermining their own principles? If the response is more state involvement, where's the line between defending democracy and adopting the very model that threatens it?
There's also the informational side. When state-aligned tech giants control digital infrastructure, it's not just about economics. It's about who sets the rules for data, speech, and privacy. That's a direct challenge to individual autonomy, and open societies haven't found a reliable counter-strategy yet.
One alternative that's gaining traction is coordinated regulation. Think of the EU's Digital Markets Act. It's an attempt to set global standards for transparency and accountability, even for foreign state-backed firms. But enforcement remains a huge hurdle, especially across jurisdictions.
If enforcement is so difficult, could democratic states focus on building resilience instead? For example, investing in independent media, civic education, and decentralized tech to dilute the influence of any single actor, state, or corporate.
That's the critical tension, defending democratic norms without mirroring the centralization we're trying to resist. As state corporate power becomes the global norm, open societies will need to innovate, not just react, if they want to preserve both accountability and autonomy. Thanks for staying with us as we unpacked these challenges. The future of democratic governance may depend on how we respond.